Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Panelcast. This is our 66th episode. Try saying that 10 times fast. My name is AJ.
And this is Brian, and we're going to be bringing you some more stories about comics and movies, as well as discussing a little bit about what we've been reading and what we've been up to. So we'll go ahead and take a quick break and be right back. Hey, this is Brian of the Forbidden Panel Podcast. I just want to invite you to listen to my companion podcast, The Geek Girls, featuring one-on-one interviews with geeky ladies. Look for Geek Girls on ForbiddenPanel.com. Hey everybody, we're back. So AJ, you wanted to talk a little bit about 24-hour comic book day.
Yes, in fact, I'm going to talk for 24 hours about 24-hour comic book day.
All right, let's get started.
Awesome. Hope you guys got some coffee. It's going to be a long conversation. So this past weekend was 24-hour comic book day. What 24-hour comic book day is basically is a commitment and a challenge that started a while back, where comic book creators will sit in one place, one location for a 24-hour period of time and challenge themselves to complete a full comic book. It's basically 24 scripts and 24 strips and 24 pages of comic books. So last year we did the competition and we, you know, did a great job and we finished the competition. It's not really a competition in the sense that you're challenging anybody else or that there's a prize or anything like that. There's no first place or anything. The challenge is, you know, the prize is you've completed a full comic book day in one day. So last year we competed and we did a great job and finished it. The book, which is coming out, is already at the printers and will be coming out here in the next couple of weeks. So yay. That was from last year. This year we got together and we competed again. What was different about this year as opposed to last year is that I had the opportunity to work with two artists instead of one. So I worked on two separate comic books during that time. The first one being a new ZKS story. I was working with Justin White, the ZKS artist, on a new ZKS story, which is going to be awesome, I think, focusing on the Afterlife, which is the aircraft carrier, which is the mobile base for ZKS. And I think we did a great job with it. We finished the story. We finished an issue. And hopefully we'll have that out within the next month or two. So, yay, new ZKS issue. The second book I worked on was with artist Scott Riddle, who was one of the people that submitted for the pinup contest. He and I worked on a comic book called The Hotel. I can't really get too much into it because, you know, copyright reasons and all that. Plus, I want it to be a surprise, but needless to say, that one came out really great as well. We were able to finish that one in a 24-hour period of time, so...
So how was it working on two different comic projects at the same time?
It was, you know, I got to say, it was kind of hard. It was kind of hard because these two guys were doing a great job of keeping pace with each other. So they would be finished at the same time and then both looking at me going, you know, what next? What do we draw next? So I don't know, man. The problem is, Brian, you've been in 4-Color before.
Yeah.
So you know about all the wonderful, glorious toys that we're surrounded by. Mm-hmm. So,
trying not to be distracted.
Right, it was very hard not to be distracted. Plus, with the movies that were playing at the same time, like we were watching Iron Man 2 and Jonah Hex and all that stuff going on, plus all the other great creators and artists that were there, you know, conversating with them and networking and having fun, and it became very distracting to try and write two books at once. But I managed to finish both scripts. Managed to finish both scripts and both strips at the same time. So we did a great job. I personally want more. Like, I want more artists there to work with at the same time. I would rather. It was a nice feeling of accomplishment, whereas last year, you know, we walked out finally finishing a full issue. And, you know, in one day, we're very happy. This year, we finished two complete issues on two completely different stories. So that was a real nice feeling. I would like more artists to work with. That way, we can walk out with, like, four or five different stories at the end of one day. That is a serious feeling of accomplishment, at least on my end, and for them as well. So, right. You know, while it was distracting and very hard, I still had a blast doing it, and I was still able... felt that I myself was able to stand up to the challenge and meet the challenge head on. Now, we weren't the only ones there. We had John Narcomi from Draw Hard Studios. We had Julian Aguilera and Alan Aguilera. Julian, who is one of the artists that we'll be working with on an upcoming project. And a lot of other different people that were there last year as well as this year. And it was a fun time. And this year, unlike last year, you could watch the whole thing on webcam. So we were being broadcast live while it was all going on. Chris, the owner of Four Color Fantasies, was walking around talking to everybody and interviewing them and getting them up on the website, you know, to try and get them some sort of notice. Unfortunately, he didn't make it to us. Thanks, Chris, you bastard. But, you know, he did a great job. Everything. It was awesome. It was an awesome experience. It's one of those where, you know, and I've been telling you, Brian, for a couple of years now that I really wish you were down here to participate in the whole event, because, you know, it's just one of those things where you just...
For a couple of years, I've only been gone like 6 months.
Whatever, Brian. You didn't show up last year because you were working.
Yeah, well, that was your fault.
That wasn't my fault.
You hired me.
So? I wasn't working there when you were working, so... but yeah, it's a great experience, and if you are a creator... And it's a great deal for those people that haven't started yet and are contemplating getting into the industry, because it's a chance for you to actually sit down and complete something within a full day. You know, I don't know what it is about it. I mean, at any point in time, we could have walked out and been like, "Fuck this, we're done."
Right.
But a lot of people didn't. They stood up to the challenge and they sat there and they finished their whole comic book. And that's what it's about. If you are curious about getting into the industry and want to, then you should challenge yourself with the 24-hour comic book day and come on out and see what you can do in a full day. At least at that point in time, you'll know whether or not you're ready to go into, you know, business for yourself or for somebody else, work with somebody else. So, I don't know. I had a blast, man. It was awesome. I smoked way too much in that time, like a pack and a half, and that's
wow.
Evil. But I met a lot of great people, and we got a lot of great art done. And, you know, I got to give it up to Scott Riddle, the artist I was working on the hotel with, because he'd been lacking in the drawing for a while. He was always trying to get back into it, and just he couldn't do it for whatever reason. But he was able to step up this challenge, and he drew more than he has in years, and his work was phenomenal. So it was great to see that come out. And Justin, as always, he manned up and he did the job, and he did a great job. I love his artwork. I love his style. And the fact that we have now a fourth ZKS book that we're finished with has me amped. So.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it was definitely a very productive 24-hour comic day.
It was. It was indeed. And well, we have 23 hours and 45 minutes left to talk about this, so I don't know what else to say. So.
Well, why don't we take a quick break and then be right back.
Awesome.
Greetings, Forbidden Panelites. This is Benjamin Gleibert, Director of Publishing for Symantec, San Diego's premium comic book publisher and home of Mythoi and the webcomic The Undergrounds. Check us out online at Symantec.com. That's Symantec.com. For now, enjoy your geeky gurus, AJ and Brian. Symantec Publishing. Find the meaning in print.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Panelcast. All right, in this segment, we're going to do like we normally do, and that's talk about the new stuff that's been going on. Brian, you're first.
Well, the first story that we got here is it's actually something that's going to be taking place this weekend. People might be noticing that their Sunday comics in the newspaper are going to be a little more pink than usual. And that is because around 50 different cartoonists that do regular Sunday features are going to be doing as part of a breast cancer promotion. It's under the tagline, I guess, Cartoonists Care. And essentially what they're going to be doing is to be raising awareness for breast cancer, which at this point in time, I'm not really sure how effective it really will be. I mean, I guess it's one of those things where, I mean, people pretty much everywhere are aware of breast cancer and aware of the dangers of it, but maybe just need to be constantly reminded of it. But it seems more like it would be more helpful to actually have some sort of a charity thing where people could actually donate money to it, you know, for actual cancer research rather than just making their comics pink.
Yeah, you know, the breast cancer awareness is a great thing to get behind. Recently, I work for the Fox Theater here in Redlands as a side part-time job, and last weekend we did a pink runway, which was a breast cancer awareness fund where survivors walked up and down the runway modeling clothes and stuff and showing how they've survived the problem. Raised a lot of money and had a great time, great experience the whole nine. It's any type of cancer, honestly, is a terrible, horrible thing. But to find survivors and people like that, you know, with the strength to carry on and move forward with their lives and overcome this horrible, horrible affliction is an amazing thing. And if you ever have a chance to be able to participate in something like this, then you should take advantage of it, because as what is it, one in every three people have some sort of cancer, you know?
I don't know the exact numbers for it. I would have to look it up. I mean, if we're talking about just all cancers, then that probably would be pretty close to the number. You know, I mean, you live long enough, eventually you're going to develop some type of cancer. But with it's just specifically with this program, like, I don't know, the stories that I've read about it, they don't really mention anything about accepting donations or really doing anything other than just, you know, mentioning breast cancer or doing some sort of, like, awareness thing in the comics.
And, you know, I hate to get all G.I. Joe about it, but, I mean, knowledge is power at this point, you know? And so the more awareness and more, you know, reminders that you have of it is the more help that you're going to be able to generate. So,
I mean, that's true. I guess, you know, some people probably just need to be reminded of it constantly to know to donate money to breast cancer awareness. It just, I don't know. It seems like they should, like, have some sort of avenue set up for people to donate money to it, because they might see the comics and think, oh, okay, well, you know, breast cancer is an important thing, but then go about their day and never really do anything about it.
Right. So. And there you go, people.
Well, yeah. What stories have you got?
I don't know how to put this, but we finally have confirmation of what's going on with Comic-Con. And it was released recently, earlier this week, that Comic-Con will indeed be staying in San Diego at least until 2015.
And the bad news?
The bad news is that it's staying in San Diego until 2015. There really is no bad news. It's more of like, you know, finally we have some sort of confirmation. We've been talking about this for the past couple months, about speculation about where Comic-Con's going to go and our feelings on the matter. And if it turns out that you know, people heard us, that they heard us, and Comic-Con will indeed be staying in San Diego until 2015. Every year, it reaches its self-imposed cap of 125,000 people. And, you know, they were more concerned about being able to move it to larger facilities in either L.A. or Anaheim after the expiration of the lease in 2012. However, they decided to go ahead and keep it until 2015 and just increase not only their limit of people, but they're also going to be increasing the size of the Comic Book Convention Center itself. The past few years, we've seen that Comic-Con has branched out not just to be hosted in the convention center, but in the surrounding hotel rooms and or hotels and parks and stuff like that. So it looks like they're going to be trying to do the same thing. You know, just keep branching out and basically take over the entire Gaslamp District to have it as Comic-Con. Not just for the people to wander around and stay in, but to actually have attractions and booths and stuff like that. So, you know, that's good news for us that are already used to going to there. I personally am going to be trying to get some money together to just buy a condo down there because we're going to be down there so much anyway. So, Brian?
Well, it's not all that surprising that that they're going to keep it there because, I mean, they've already had mentioned previously that they're going to be building that extension. So
right.
It seemed like a pretty sure thing.
Just as long as they don't do nothing stupid like hosting Dan Quayle's fucking economic thing at the same time, then they'll do a great job.
I think it was Al Gore,
Dan Quayle, who gives a fuck. One of those people who were vice presidents and never cool enough to be an actual president.
Right. All right, well, moving on. I guess this probably just comes in as sort of a result of my reading that comic, The 99. But I've been starting to notice a little bit more of, like, you know, just, I guess, Muslim influence in terms of comic books. I don't know if it's just something that it's always been there and I'm just now noticing it. But got a story here about a comic that is coming out from Liquid Comics. It's going to be featuring a Muslim superhero. Not a lot of details about the actual story at the moment, but essentially, from what I understand, is this superhero was developed as sort of a group of disabled Americans and Syrians who got together in through something called the Open Hands Initiative. It's a nonprofit organization, and developed a superhero who is a young man that has been disabled as a result of war, and eventually discovers that he has not telepathic powers. I don't know specifically what you would call the power, but he can control metal with his mind. And so I guess he uses that ability to sort of compensate for his injuries as well as to help others.
That sounds very interesting. And you're right, I've been noticing a lot more Muslim comics recently.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know if it's just a byproduct of reading The 99 or if it's actually something where maybe, you know, maybe just the media in general is starting to notice it more, so I see more stories about it. I'm not sure if, you know, what the influence is, but it seems like I've been noticing a lot more of a Muslim theme in terms of comics.
Awesome. Then do you like these comics? Do you like the one that you just described?
Well, so far the only one that I've read is The 99. I haven't started the rest of the series. I've just read the origin comic, but I like that. I enjoyed it. And, you know, I found it interesting to kind of get a little bit of a different perspective on a comic, but it was still familiar enough as a superhero comic that I could, you know, I didn't feel alienated reading it, even though, you know, I'm not a Muslim.
Right.
So, I mean, I was still able to read it, and I was still able to enjoy this story and get something out of it. And so I've become a little bit more interested in seeing how that particular religion, you know, those particular set of beliefs kind of translate into comic book form. And so far it's been interesting, so I'd be willing to check this one out as well.
So is this going to be a continuing trend for you? Are you going to be trying to find other religious comic books or, you know, or is it just for this?
Well, no, I mean, definitely I'll be looking at, you know, other things as well. I mean, it seems that, you know, Christianity has, I think, always had sort of a larger influence in comics, at least in terms of American comics. I haven't really ever come across any comics that had any particular, like, Jewish theme. I've also noticed, too, that things like Buddhism do seem to influence a lot of comics, especially some of the more paranormal or mystically themed comics tend to have a lot of different kind of Buddhist philosophy and a lot of, you know, things like that, sort of like Eastern mysticism mixed into them. So, I mean, religious themes in comics is not really anything new. It's just I've been noticing it more with Islam, I think.
Agreed. There's a lot of people, like, you know, in most of the mainstream comic books, they normally use religion as a reference point as opposed to any actual, you know, like, something they're fighting for or something like that, you know, or a mainstream belief. Like, it's something mentioned in passing or, you know, when they get offended or something like that, but nothing really as a major storyline or any type of comic books revolved around it. So to see things like this and see you discovering things like this, you know, it's very enlightening and it's kind of cool to see. Is it your new blue water? But, you know, the opposite.
Well, yeah, I definitely am not. I'm not enraged like blue water is to me. I don't know. I mean, I can't say that I'm just going to go on this crusade of only reading religious comics, but, you know, it's definitely is something that, as long as they can tell the story well, and as long as, you know, like, it depends really, I think, on how they're going to present it. Like, I wouldn't want to read something that was essentially just a comic preaching about, you know, I'm going to go to hell because I'm an infidel or something like that. I wouldn't want anything to do with that. Like, in terms of what I've read so far of the 99, it's a pretty much straightforward superhero comic. It's just...
they just happen to be Muslims.
The themes. Yeah, the themes that they present and the sort of like the mythology behind this story is, you know, of Muslim origin. So it's like the same thing with like, what was that comic? Midnight Nation, I think. Is that Midnight Nation, something like that?
Where they're walking around in limbo?
Yeah, they're walking around in limbo and there's a lot of like Christian themes to that. And, you know, there's a lot of Christian imagery in it, but it's sort of as like the backdrop to this story. It wasn't the point of this story.
Right.
It was like the point of this story was about these characters and what they're going through. And it's sort of the same thing with the 99, where, you know, the point of this story isn't that they're Muslim. It's just that's the background to it. Like, that's where this story is getting its, you know, drawing its source from. But it's not the point.
Unless, of course, it's Garth Ennis's Muslim comic book.
Well, yeah, that would be something entirely different. But I think that might be a little interesting as well.
No shit.
But yeah, I mean, so I'll read pretty much any kind of comic. I don't necessarily care about the religious content as long as they're telling a story well. That's all I want. I want a story, and I don't want to be preached at.
Amen, brother.
So what have you got?
Herpes.
Oh, well, tell us about that.
It burns. Oh, this week has been a big confusion in the news stories, or I wouldn't say confusion, but a big bomb and surprise was dropped on us Spider-Man fans. Earlier this week, it was announced that Emma Stone had been offered a role in the up-and-coming Spider-Man. A lot of people naturally assumed that she was being offered the role of Mary Jane Watson to take the place of Kirsten Dunst's role. And honestly, a fucking Dalmatian could have taken place of that role better than Kirsten Dunst did. But we're not talking about that right now. Mostly people assumed it because of Emma Stone's red hair. A lot of people see her in the movies with being redheaded and so on. So they just presumed that she was being offered the role of Mary Jane Watson. And then yesterday, our ideas were switched around. Apparently she was offered the role of Gwen Stacy, Emma Stone being a natural blonde, which a lot of us forgot or just didn't care because it's Emma Stone. And she was offered the role of Gwen Stacy and has accepted. So Emma Stone will now be seen as the new Gwen Stacy in the up-and-coming Spider-Man movie. I am a huge fan of Emma Stone. I think this girl rocks ever since Superbad and Zombieland and all the other cool shit that she's been in. You know, I'm a big fan of her, so I'm excited to see what she's going to do with this role. Brian?
Well, yeah, I have to say that I didn't care for Kirsten Dunst at all. So, yeah, it would be nice to see somebody else, like another female lead, come in. Do they know yet who's supposed to be playing Spider-Man? Is it going to be?
Yeah, they cast Spider-Man a while ago. Don't ask me who it is right now because I can't think. I'm still staring at Emma Stone's picture.
It's not Tobey Maguire.
It's a whole new recasting. They're starting from scratch. Basically, they're ignoring the past three movies, which is stupid, in my opinion. But they're ignoring the past three movies and starting all over. Why it's stupid is because it's so new. It'd be like rebooting Batman right now, you know? Not that these Spider-Man movies were...
I wouldn't put it past them, honestly.
Not that the Spider-Man movies
were... They're making Stretch Armstrong the movie, so...
Yeah, shit. But, and it's,
give up all...
It's not saying that Spider-Man was great, that any of these movies were great or anything. It's just, it's so brand new.
Right.
These movies were done in the last decade. So to redo it again within a 10-year block, it just doesn't make sense to me, especially when you have three movies that came out, you know? Now, they're redoing Superman, which is something that we'll get into in another... Actually, you know what? I'm talking about it. Might as well slide it in. Zack Snyder has been offered the role and has accepted the job of directing the next Superman. The Superman that he's going to make, though, is another reboot. Now, you know, the latest Superman came out, what, 5 years ago? So, again, they're rebooting something that's so new in our brain, it's just, it doesn't make any sense. It's like when they redid the Hulk, you know?
Yeah, which was kind of weird, because the last Superman movie was sort of a reboot slash whatever. Because, I mean, from what I understand, though, the last movie that came out was supposed to be a sequel to Superman 1, and sort of, like...
Well, Superman 2.
Supplanting... Yeah. Or Superman 2. Yeah, it was supposed to fit in there somewhere, but like it was supposed to replace some of the other subsequent Superman movies, and it—I don't know—they kind of just came in the middle of a storyline, and they don't really explain anything. So it's the way that they went about that Superman movie. I don't—it doesn't really bother me as much that they're gonna replace that one, because it—that just seemed like it was just like a part of a Superman story, and they didn't really tell anything.
And there was no fucking action. He didn't fight anybody. What did he do? Catch a plane? That was it. That was his big moment.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it was stupid.
Oh, he lifted up a big rock, too.
Ooh. Good for him.
So, yeah, there wasn't really anything that happened at all in that movie, so that doesn't bother me. But, yeah, the Spider-Man movies, well...
Like I said, it's not that they were great movies. Some of them were absolutely horrible.
Well, I really enjoyed the first one.
Yeah, the first one was pretty good, but I mean, hey, it's so brand new, it's still in our brain. You know, it's
right,
just,
right. No, yeah, I agree.
I mean, think it's too soon to reboot it. And they're rebooting Spider-Man all the time. Like, in the past 5 years, we've had three brand new Spider-Man animated TV shows, you know? So it's like, really? Do we have to go through this again? Can't we just continue on from a different point? You know? Yeah, it's just stupid. That's my opinion, but Emma Stone, good job.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll get something lasting this time.
That's what she said.
All right, well, I've got a story here that this one's just another... not a huge story for me, but it might be for some people, in that Peanuts is turning 60 this year.
Watch what you say.
You know, I mean,
you know I love Peanuts.
Yeah, I know. I liked Peanuts when I was little, and as I've gotten older, I just kind of cared less and less about it. And it's not that I think it's bad. I actually, I don't know. It just got to a point where it was never captured my interest after a while, you know. And seeing the same film for the past 30 years every Christmas.
Yeah, but it's such an iconic film.
It is an icon. It is, and that's why I'm mentioning it, because I know that, you know, Charlie Brown is beloved by hundreds of millions of people all over the world. So, I mean, it would be remiss of me not to say something about it. But in terms of my own personal life, I mean, I like Peanuts okay. I don't really go out of my way to read them. And so, I mean, congrats to, you know, the former Charles Schulz on creating something.
Is he no longer Charles Schulz?
Outliving him. Well, I mean, technically not.
I think the proper term is the late Charles Schulz.
The late Charles Schulz, whatever.
Not only did he die, but he changed his name.
Well, I think once you're dead, you don't have the rights to it anymore.
Hey, it's on your tombstone. You have it forever, or at least until the tombstone breaks. But
I mean, you know, I mean, it's good for him that, you know, he was able to create something that's going to last longer than he did. You know, I mean, Peanuts is something that's kind of ingrained in American culture, and you know, I mean, it's a cartoon that people all over the world know.
Right.
You know, how many cartoons from other countries can really say that?
Right.
So, you know, I mean, he's created something, and, you know, good on him for having it last as long as it did. I mean, it's amazing that, you know, how many things last for 60 years.
Well, you know, I'm a huge Peanuts fan. Like, I grew up on it, had all the books, everything. I loved Peanuts. Snoopy was my homie. Got through a lot of tough times thanks to Snoopy. So, you know, I personally am not surprised to see that it has lasted 60 years. Congratulations on the late Charles Schulz and the whole Peanuts gang. It's awesome.
All right. Well, if you don't have any other stories, then I guess we can go ahead and take a break.
Okie dokie.
Hi, this is Brandi Offset of BrandiOffset.com, and every week I listen to Forbidden Panel's Panelcast because AJ and Brian are the coolest dudes that I know, and because I like to hear my advertisement in between the panelcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Continuing on our new segment, I wanted to talk about the new Luke Cage casting. I wanted to talk about the new Luke Cage casting. Idris Elba, and I'm sure I'm butchering his name, you guys may remember him recently from the movie Losers. He's recently entered a deal with Marvel Comics to be starring in a lot of their movies. He wants to try, and he was quoted as saying, "I wouldn't mind having a crack at bringing Blade back, personally, but there's a couple of things that they have. Luke Cage is very interesting," end quote. So he looks like there's a good chance of him playing Luke Cage. I personally don't see him as a Luke Cage character. He's just not built for it. I'm thinking more Terry Crews along the lines of Luke Cage, but that's just me. Though he does have the acting chops. Seeing him on Luther recently has impressed the shit out of me with his acting ability. So I'd be very interested in seeing that happen.
Maybe he can just, like, bulk up or something for the role. Like, just crazy steroid-fueled workout program for it.
Yeah, but I think that would take away from it. Unlike Chris Hemsworth, who, you know, massively put on a lot of weight and muscle for Thor, I just don't see that as something he would do. That, you know, I don't know. I just don't see it working for him, honestly.
Or maybe just, you know, tone up nicely or something.
Maybe, but Luke Cage is...
Maybe... Yeah.
Luke Cage is a big character. You know?
That's true.
I mean, he's just a big character, and it's because he has nigh invulnerable skin, which means he can barely feel anything. So that's one of the reasons why he's so massive, is that he just keeps pumping up the weight because he can't feel the pain of working out. So, you know. We'll see.
Maybe they could just CG the muscles on there or something.
That would be horrible. Horrible. I do have a lot of faith in this film, in the Luke Cage movie, because John Singleton is directing it. So I feel a lot of realism coming into the role of the film. I don't see Elba as being him. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, who knows, but yeah. Brian?
Yeah, well, I'm not terribly familiar with the actor, so... I mean, yeah, you mentioned a couple of the roles that he was in, but I don't know. We'll see how it goes. It's one of those things that I don't really have enough of an opinion about it to express it at this point.
Right.
Well, I guess we could just go ahead and do this.
It wouldn't be a news segment without it.
Yeah, people are kind of expecting it, so... Mm-hmm. Guess who is making an unauthorized biography comic about everybody's favorite female IndyCar driver, Danica Patrick? I'll give you three guesses.
Blue Water?
Yeah, you got it on the first guess.
Yay!
Yes, Blue Water's making another comic book that nobody's going to care about. With shitty art and probably wind up getting embroiled in another lawsuit over.
You know, I have to disagree with you on that. You say that nobody cares about it, but obviously somebody does, because they have enough money not only to stay afloat, but to keep putting out these crappy comic books.
You know, I'm starting to think that there's some sort of conspiracy going on. Something with aliens or something.
Government funded?
Yeah. Yeah, there's something going on there. People aren't buying these comics. I don't believe that. I'll get to the bottom of this conspiracy and I'll report on it.
There you have your new OCD mission.
Yeah, it's starting to feel like that, so I figured I may as well just go off the deep end and just take it all the way.
Just go with it, Brian. Just go with it.
Oh, have you got anything else?
Yeah, I've got a couple more stories I'm going to throw out here. First off, Wonder Woman is finally heading back to TV. Apparently, whatever they're trying to do with it in a movie fashion is failing or something. I don't know, but they're bringing it to the TV. I personally think that they're trying to find something to replace the fact that Smallville is ending after this season. So they're trying to bring back Wonder Woman onto the CW. I don't know what to think about this, honestly. I could care less right now. I don't know if it's just because of the character or what, because I feel I'm just not in the mood to spend the next 10 years of my life watching some chick turn into Wonder Woman like I spent with Smallville, but I don't know. Who knows?
Well, would it be another like origin type thing?
It would have to be. They wanted to tackle the contemporary take on it, whereas you know, originally the original Wonder Woman TV show took place during World War II era.
Right.
Now they want to take a contemporary look at it in the Amazon, or I don't know, who cares? I think it's a retarded move on their part. Yeah. So on that same note, though, I do want to talk about Smallville.
Maybe what they'll end up doing is just bringing Linda Carter back and, you know, do something there. It'll be like, you know, Wonder Woman in her geriatric years or something.
I don't know. I think it's all retarded. Yeah. Anyway, I want to take that opportunity to talk about Smallville. This season is the last season of Smallville. I know nobody cares because it's such a shitty TV show, but I've been watching it for some reason. I don't know why. It's one of those things where you watch afterwards and you're like, why did I watch that? Why do I waste my time with you?
It started off entertaining, and then I gave up after about 3 years.
Yeah, after 10 years, it's still too teeny boppy for it to be coherent.
Right, because, I mean, all the people that are on that show have got to be at least in their 30s by now.
Yeah, I'm serious. But in an attempt to go out with a bang, they have promised that you'll see Clark in costume. He's already changed his outfit from the black gothic one to the red and blue outfit that he's wearing now. They're bringing a lot of cameos in there. We've already seen Hawkman show up. Darkseid is supposed to be the main villain this season, and the animation I've seen for it is fucking horrible, and if it's anything as bad as what they did with, oh my god, Doomsday. I couldn't remember his name. If it's anything as bad as they did with Doomsday like 2 seasons ago, then it's just going to continue to be horrible. It's been 10 years, guys. It's going to be good to see him go. I personally am excited for the last episode of the season because I'm sure they'll pull out all the stops, but it's about time. So, moving right along to the last bit of news that I had, Brian, you didn't have anything else you wanted to toss in, did you?
No.
All right. Mark Ruffalo recently talked to Empire about the new film, his new film that he has upcoming called The Kids Are All Right. It's already out, I guess. I don't know. I'm bumbling now. I'm so fucking tired. that he gave a little insight as his role as Bruce Banner. It says that they've set up several pictures over a couple of years and possibly will be a Hulk movie and a couple more Avengers movie as well, with Mark Ruffalo being signed up to be Bruce Banner for the rest of eternity. So the way he sees it is that Ed Norton has bequeathed the role to him. He reckons that the part is his generation's Hamlet and that there's still room for interpretation on who the Hulk is. So basically what he's saying is he's going to be the Hulk forever, and there's a good chance that you'll see him in his own movie as well as future Avengers movies as well, also, which I think is kind of retarded since we don't even know what the Avengers is going to look like now. So, I don't
know. Yeah, and then, you know, they'll end up changing their mind later and recasting it anyway. So.
Right, right. All it takes is one screw-up on your part, Mark, or the director's part, and you could be out and we could be looking at fucking...
Or even just the whim of, you know, the people in charge.
Right. It's just... We could be looking at Haley Joel Osment as the next Bruce Banner. Who knows? You know, the way that the Hulk is being cast right now is... It's like... The old school Batmans, where you didn't know who Batman was going to be this movie. You know, whether it was
right.
Keaton or Val Kilmer or George Clooney. It's starting to take on the same role with the Hulk. So, I don't know. It's all retarded, in my opinion. What they need to do is salt the earth. Start from scratch. See what the Avengers are going to do. And just go from there. If the Avengers looks like it's going to be an awesome team-up movie that can continue on, do it. If it looks like having a bunch of superheroes and big-name actors in one movie is too much, then don't do it anymore. But don't already plan on other stuff coming out when we haven't even seen the next product. We haven't seen the next Captain America yet, which, you know, is supposed to come out before the Avengers. So how they're doing this is beyond me. Speaking of the Avengers, I did have a chance to catch the two-hour mini-sode collaboration of the new animated TV show that's coming out called Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Basically, what the Marvel has done is they put out little five-minute segments, kind of like prequels, leading up to the actual launch of the TV series, which happens in November.
Right.
And I had a chance to get through about three or four of them, and it's not bad. It's not bad. The sound, the songs, the music, this opening song is fucking horrendous. I wouldn't recommend it to my deaf neighbor. But otherwise,
how's the animation and everything?
The animation is not bad. It's not. It's very, very kid-like. You know,
because I know when I was watching the Wolverine and the X-Men, it took me a little while to get over the animation for that before I was able to really get into the story for it.
You see, but it's not that bad. It's still cartoony.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Wolverine and the X-Men was a little bit more realistic, kind of, at times. This is completely cartoony. This is very Marvel Superhero Squad, but like a step up.
Okay.
So it's, yeah, it may take some getting used to. The feeling of it is very childlike, but they deal with a lot of adult themes so far that I'm seeing. So far I've seen Iron Man pop out. Now they're dealing with the Hulk. I believe the next one is Captain America. I'm working through this. It's 2 hours long, so it's going to take me a bit to get through it. But I'm not disappointed with what I'm seeing so far. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. But again, it's the Avengers. Who knows? They'll probably screw it up somehow. But that's all the news I had for this segment. Brian, if you got nothing else, we'll go ahead and take another break. And when we come back, we'll start reviewing some horrendous movies that we... have subjected ourselves to in the past week, so we'll be right back.
Guys, this is Daniel Corey. I'm the founder of Danger Cat Creative Studio, and I want to tell you real quick about my upcoming comic, Moriarty, The Dark Chamber. It's about Professor Moriarty, the arch nemesis of Sherlock Holmes. I'm working with artist Anthony Diachidua on it, letterer Dave Lampier. Please go to DangerCat.com and check it out. That's DangerCat.com. And please go over to Kickstarter.com. We're running a campaign right now to try to raise funds for the production of the book. So, you know, shoot us an email, let us know how you like it, and we'll see you on the web.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Brian, please tell me you've read something this week.
No. In fact, I've read two somethings this week.
Oh my gosh, like heart attack, hello.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I caught up on Nemesis and the new Mark Millar comic, and The Walking Dead, of course. Read the latest issues for both of those, and I have to say that they're both still very exciting comics. Well, Nemesis is, what, it's the third issue?
Yeah,
out of a four-issue series. So, I mean, it's going to be a short enough story that should stay pretty much exciting throughout. But just the way that the story is developing, every time you think you kind of got figured out what's going on, then you realize, oh, fuck, I have no clue what's going on. So it's one of those things where I just want them to hurry up and get out the next issue so I can try to figure out what the hell is going on. And so far, it's just a lot of people dying, and this guy is a crazy nut job, and that's about all I know.
Do you like the comic?
Yeah, I do. It's interesting to see. It's almost like he's a kind of like an anti-Batman, where he doesn't have any powers. He doesn't have anything aside from just vast wealth and all kinds of interesting gadgets and stuff like Batman, you know.
Right.
And except he's evil. And he kills people and does basically whatever he wants. So he's kind of like a combination. Like, if you took the Batman and Joker and they had a son, that's what you would end up with, is Nemesis.
I've been reading the series as well. And at first, I thought it was awesome. I thought it was glorious and blah, 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 blah. Unfortunately, I think, now that I'm on the third issue, I'm at a crossroads. I'm on the fence about this thing because I don't know if... It's way too over the top. Like, it is seriously, like, if you went to over the top and 10 steps above it, that's what it feels like to me. Whereas the first comic felt almost like, because, I mean, the entire series is supposed to be bound in reality. It's bound in the same universe as Kick-Ass, Mark Millar's other comic. And with Kick-Ass, I was able to believe a lot of the stuff that was going on because they showed, you know, it was very realistic in certain aspects. Nemesis is just so over the top that I've been removed from that reality and placed back into a superhero reality, or at least an ultra-violent reality, like the reality where Clockwork Orange exists, you know? So I kind of don't know how I feel about it. It's just, I mean, the president's dead, and all these people are being raped and murdered and mutilated, and he had, like, this ultimate plan and blah, 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 blah. It is way too convoluted. Like, you're right about the Batman and Joker analogy, where that's what it feels like Mark Millar did. He took, like, the most fucked up situations that you can do, and he just ran with it and keeps making it more and more and more and more and more fucked up. Like, it's really getting, it's almost retarded at this point. Not to say that it's bad. It's written well, and he seems to be having fun with it, but I don't know. Again, I feel like I've been taken out of reality. The reality of it being where it's based out of. So, I don't know. We'll see where the series leads us and then go from there.
Yeah, well, I guess you'd have to see how it ends. I don't know. Myself, personally, I've been enjoying it, and I wasn't aware that it was supposed to be in the same world that Kick-Ass was. But, I mean, Kick-Ass, even to me, you know, some of the things that happened in there were not terribly realistic, so...
Right, but they were somewhat realistic. Like, you could see how this could happen. Like, you can see how that stuff could happen.
You know? No, right. You're right, though, in that, you know, I mean, some of the things that he does, especially with, like, all the technology that he has, you know, that he's using to escape from his situations. And, I mean, obviously, even...
It's very convenient. That's what it feels like. It's very convenient.
Yeah. In some cases, I think it is that, you know, it's kind of just being... use in there to drive the story. So I don't know, maybe I'll be terribly disappointed by the last issue, but so far I've enjoyed it.
Cool. What else have you been reading?
And also catching up on the latest issue of The Walking Dead number 77. And I think by this point it's not really a spoiler to say that, you know, they're in the is it Atlanta that they're
no I believe the they're in Washington in, or they're in Washington.
Washington. I can't. They've been to so many different areas. I always forget where it is. But they've found essentially they've been staying in this city that they came across that appears to be it's sort of the last bastion
civilization.
Of civilization. Yeah, like normal kind of, you know, everyday civilization. You know, like urban suburban type of thing. And they've been noticing a lot of interesting, just little things that they've been noticing since they've got there that have not been sitting well with them, and things that have been happening with the actions of some of the people that are already there. And, you know, everything that they've been through, they've been really on edge. And so I'm not really sure how much I should say, because some of the details that have led up to the point that they're at, but essentially, yeah, fucking Robert Kirkman, man, he just knows how to write a good comic. And I like it. It was at the point when they got to this city, I was kind of worried that it was going to be something where the story would kind of start to slack off.
Right, like I felt that way too. Like it was going to be relaxed a little bit, and I was almost looking forward to it. I felt that they deserved a little time off, you know, from all the drama and bullshit that's been happening. But no, it hasn't been like that at all.
Right, but at the same time, like you kind of don't want that to happen, because you don't want the story to just kind of peter out, and it's not like there's not a lot happening in terms of zombies, but just the way that the tension is going on between all these different groups of characters, and even amongst, you know, Rick's group once they got there, because, you know, all of their attitudes, some of them are with them and feeling that this community.
Right, some of them become complacent. Some of them become complacent, yeah. While the other ones are on edge. Like, it's obvious we can't trust anybody. Why are we going to trust these people, you know?
And some of them, it's not that necessarily that they're becoming complacent, but it's that they are growing so attached to the idea of this being, you know, their return to civilization, that, you know, they're kind of starting to split away from Rick's group. And so it's really interesting the way that there's not a lot of zombie action going on, but he's keeping up the dynamic between the characters, which I think is really what's always been sort of driving the story anyways, is how the characters have all interacted with each other. And you know, the zombies have just kind of been
incidental. The zombies have always been a backstory. They've always been a backstory. Right. And it's one of those things where I'm having a hard time in writing ZKS trying to find the balance for, you know, between keeping the zombies still an interest, but as well as having the characters be an interest as well. Robert Kirkman, he's made them part of the background. Not saying that they have no importance or anything like that. No, they have major importance, but it's like
right, but they're part of
right,
the environment.
Part of the environment.
Rather than being sort of characters unto themselves. Like it would be the same thing like if you had a story that took place, you know, during a hurricane, where the hurricane is in the background, and, you know, and you're dealing with the characters that are, you know, how the characters are dealing with the situation. Like it's something like that, but the zombies are more of a force of nature than the point of the story.
Right. So, see, I'm having a problem with this current storyline. And I don't know if it's because of the storyline or just in general with The Walking Dead, in that I find that when I read The Walking Dead, I can't just read one issue and then walk away. I have to read a story arc at a time, because it's just so involved that, I mean, this is Deadwood, you know? It's so involved and complicated, and everything that's going on, there's so much dialogue and so much that's happening, that when you take that month off in between issues, you kind of forget all the minor nuances and little details that happened in the previous issue. And you kind of have to go back over it before you read the next issue. Otherwise, you know, you're going to spend a lot of time trying to play catch up on what's going on. So I find that there's that problem. And there's also the problem was where I can't read The Walking Dead when I'm reading all my other comic books, because I can't read all these superhero villains and all this shit going on and then come into Robert Kirkman's world of The Walking Dead and be okay with what's happening there. It's like, and it's not that The Walking Dead isn't good or exciting. It's that I feel that it's a lull with everything else that's happening with what I'm reading otherwise. You know what I mean? So while I've caught up to 77, because I've been excited to see what's happening, and the next story arc, from what I understand, is going to be fucked up even more, I find that I'm waiting now between story arcs before I pick it up. So that way I can enjoy it more. I feel that I enjoy it more when I read it collectively than I do when I read it issue by issue by issue. And
yeah, I can see that. Personally, myself, I don't want to wait.
Right.
So I read them as they come
out. And that's how it's going to be for some people. And it's just for me, I don't know. I tried both ways. I've tried reading it issue by issue and find that it pisses me off to wait a month in between. And then I've read them collectively in a story arc and find that I'm more satisfied that way. So the problem that I always have, of course, is waiting 4 to 5 months for the story arc to finish before picking up the comic. You know, I'm reading it, right, and I have to go all that time of people, no, don't tell me about it, don't talk about it, shh, you know, don't ruin anything. And so, I don't know, it's a catch-22. I'm interested in what other people think and how they read it. So, you know, if you guys are out there reading The Walking Dead, let me know what your opinion on it, if you agree with me or if you agree with Brian, one way or another. Anything else you've been reading?
That's about it for the time being. Just catching up on those ones, and I've got a couple others that I'm planning on picking back up and catching up on. I haven't gotten to it yet.
I've been reading, like I said, like I normally do, is I read all the monthlies, all the weeklies, everything that comes out, as much as I can, as much as I like. And first off, I want to say I fucking hate vampires. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, vampires are getting to be a little much.
Every goddamn
nowadays.
Fucking title that's out there is vampires, and it's working my last fucking nerve. Seriously, it's getting stupid. I'm sorry for the language I'm using. I apologize. But holy crap, Marvel, when you guys sure know how to beat a dead horse. Like, you beat it, you rape it, and then you eat it, and then shit it out afterwards and beat and rape the shit. Like, seriously, what the hell is wrong with you and vampires? It's getting annoying. Like, everywhere I turn is these goddamn vampires.
And vampires are already annoying before Marvel ever got their fingers on them.
You know,
so.
Vampires in a different setting, occasionally showing up, is awesome, you know? Mm-hmm. But right now, the market is flooded with vampires. Everywhere you look, it's vampire this, vampire that, vampire. And Marvel, you're just hopping on the bandwagon like everybody else. And running with the vampires, and I hate it. I hate you guys. I really hate it. And I hate the fact that I have to read this in order to continue on with the storylines of the characters that I like. You know? I hate it. I'm just saying that I hate it. I'm also hating the fact that you guys are oversaturating the market with everybody and their 20 different titles. Like, seriously, how many titles does Deadpool need? How many titles does Wolverine need? How many more X-Men titles do we need? How many more Avengers titles? I know I keep saying this over and over and over again, but it's stupid. Because every time I complain about all these extra titles that you have coming out the next month,
they just
the next
more.
Month, those extra titles have extra titles for them. It makes no sense. You guys are retarded. I hate you. But I do have to give you credit on one title that's out right now, and that's Shadowland. The Shadowland storyline with Daredevil, I really like. I really am digging it. But if you turn Daredevil into a fucking vampire, I swear to God, I will find your mom and beat her to death. Because I really like where you're going with the Shadowland storyline. The way you're bringing everybody in and you're stepping up their attitudes. Like, Moon Knight has always been a jacked up dude, but he's out there pillaging and killing and everything. Everybody else that's in there is just getting ultra violent. And in case you haven't noticed, I like violence in comic books. I like violence in TV shows. I like violence in life and sex. Okay, I just like violence. So the Shadowlands storyline is stepping up that violence quotient, and I'm really digging on it. So stay with that and get away from the fucking vampires. That's all I'm saying. Speaking of oversaturation of vampires, Brian and I have...
Yes.
Well, I gotta admit, I forced Brian to watch this so that we could talk shit about it on the show.
Yeah, and
Brian, what are we talking about?
We were talking about the new 30 Days of Night movie.
30 Days of Night, Dark Days.
Also known as 30 Days of Crap.
Because that movie doesn't take place over 30 days.
No, yeah, it's sort of loosely connected to the 30 Days of Night movie in that they talk about it.
Well, it has one of the characters from the movie.
Yeah, is it even
no,
the, same
not the same
actress? I don't even remember.
It's not the same actress.
But, yeah, it just, like, the beginning of the movie started out, okay, I'm like, all right, so they're setting this up. I'm like, all right, this could be watchable. And then it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And then these other people come in and you don't know what's going on. And just the dialogue is bad. And eventually it just got to the point where I kind of zoned out and I don't really remember how it ends. I think I just need to stay away from anything with vampires in it for about 5 years because I don't care anymore. I don't want to hear the word vampire. I swear if I see people this Halloween wearing vampire teeth, I'm going to punch them.
Knock their vampire teeth down their throat. Yeah, so I watched this movie. I made Brian watch this movie because again, I wanted something to bitch about on the show. The movie is loosely based off the comic book series Dark Days, but it changes a lot of what's going on in the story, much like all media release versions of comic books do. They kind of switch it up. What really bothered me is that this movie was filled with a bunch of sidekicks from TV shows. Like, every actor in this movie has been a co-star somewhere along the line. The girl that they had playing Stella, you know what? Let me IMDb this before I go any further, because I don't want to butcher this. Okay. First off, any movie starring any movie right off the bat that is starring Harold Perrineau, who many of you remember as Michael from Lost, is going to be crap. Because this guy's been just searching for something to do with his career ever since he got kicked off of Lost. Period. Kylie Sanchez, who is drop-dead gorgeous, is right now the sidekick on the Glades. She's the chick on the Glades that the main character is having in the hots for, the nurse. Rizzo, who many of you may know from Entourage. He was the director of Midian and all the other movies that Vincent Chase has been in. He's the director from there. So this movie is filled with a lot of co-stars and sidekicks. So no major name has been in there, just people that you would see in passing. That's your first clue that this is going to be a crappy movie. Yeah, I don't know where to go, what else to say with this. They changed so much based on it. Yeah, it was just crap. Crap, 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 crap. It was what it was. It was a direct-to-DVD movie, and for that, it did its job. But yeah, even the special effects were crappy.
Yeah, there wasn't anything that I was terribly impressed with at all. Like I said, eventually I just got to the point where I think I just kind of stopped paying attention to what was happening in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, what was up with the squealing vampires, too? That was annoying. Like, all you hear was those,
It was like, seems to be the thing now with monster movies is to like make them squeal like pigs or something.
It sounded like they took a sound bite from Deliverance and used it for all the vampires. That's what they did.
Yeah.
So, anywho, that was the crap we watched this week.
Yeah, completely forgettable.
One last piece of crap I wanted to talk about before we take our break. I watched Jonah Hex.
I have not seen that, and I've heard that it's a big pile. So,
I don't know if I'll ever get those hours back in my life, but I can say this. It was not a great movie. It was, yeah, by far not a great movie, but it was better than The Fantastic Four, than Ghost Rider. Yeah, it was better than those movies.
That's not really much of a feat,
yes, but
though.
It's still better than them, which means it wasn't horrible.
Yeah.
It was. It could be likable, and it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it wasn't good. It was.
So I'm pretty sure that Walking on Glass would be better than the Fantastic
Four. Yes, Walking
movie,
on Glass would be so. Better than that, but it's Walking on Glass is better than being annually raped by a burning cattle prod, and that's what Jonah Hex was. It was Walking on Glass. So From what I understand, they changed a lot from the comic book. I'm not a big fan of the comic books. I was going to take the opportunity to begin reading them when they did the reboot a few years ago, but I just never got around to it. The animated short they had at the end of I think it was Under the Red Hood, Under the Red Hood, the Batman story. They put a Jonah Hex short at the end of that. That was better than the Jonah Hex movie. But it wasn't horrible. It wasn't horrible. Everyone complained about Megan Fox, and she really wasn't that bad in it. Josh Brolin was Josh Brolin. You know, he did the best he could with what he had. It was just, they tried too hard. They really tried too hard. They took it from being what could have been a real awesome Western and made it into Wild Wild West with Will Smith. You know, if they would have just stuck with the Western feel for it, they would have done a great job. It would have been a great movie. But yeah, it just was not great. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. So, there you go. Brian, you got anything else for the segment?
No, I think that was all of my disappointments for the
week. Awesome. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back and wrap up the show.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. All right, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up here. So before I do that, I just want to make sure that everybody knows about our Join the ZKS Army contest. This is a contest that we're having where we're inviting you to come out and cosplay as your favorite ZKS character or create a new one. Just come on out and have a good time. AJ, do you want to mention where that's being located?
Yeah, it's being held at the Fox Theater in Redlands on October 29th. It starts at 6 p.m. You can either come out dressed as your favorite ZKS member or create your own, or you can come dressed as zombies, which I'm pretty sure a majority of the people will be doing anyway. Afterwards, we'll be trying to stage a zombie walk through the streets of Redlands. So it should be a lot of fun. Come on out, please. And anybody that comes dressed up, we'll be taking your picture and then using your character design and your picture to have your likeness drawn into the comic book, into the ZKS series itself. So it'll be a lot of fun.
And don't forget that afterwards, you can also attend the Halloween Horror Nights.
Right, and what that is basically it's a haunted house type thing that's going on, that's being thrown on by RCPS SoCal. They're a paranormal research place that is trying to host like a horror maze, as well as a showing of House on Haunted Hill and a whole bunch of other cool contests. It's something to do so close to Halloween. You just come on out and have a blast with it. And you can do that directly afterwards, after the ZKS Army contest, because it's being held in the same location.
And for anybody that's interested, New York Comic Con is this weekend. It's actually starting Friday and going till Sunday. So it's the 8th to the 10th. Unfortunately, I will not be attending, as I am extremely broke and have no way to get to New York.
Boo.
Definitely, you know, go down there, check it out. And it's going to be a lot of... from what I understand, New York Comic Con is a little more comic book geared than San Diego Comic Con is. So I think it's definitely a lot smaller.
From my understanding, it's a toss up between WonderCon and San Diego Con. So it's somewhere in between there. It's kind of like a Long Beach Comic Con. So if you're out in New York area and you like that kind of stuff, then you should go check it out, because it'll be fun. Let us know what you guys think.
Yeah. Well, maybe I can do it vicariously. You know, I've got some people that I know that are going to Comic-Con, so. Sadly, I will not be making it. Also, we've got Ape coming up. I don't remember the exact dates for Ape.
October 16th and the 17th at the Concourse Center in San Francisco. We will have a booth there, so come on out and say hi. Anybody that comes up and mentions the panel cast or anything like that, will receive free stickers and a free hug from Justin.
Yeah, so get your free hugs, people. I think that's pretty much going to do it for this panel cast, unless you've got anything else that you need to throw in there.
No, I didn't have much to throw in there, please continue to check out the ZKS website, zombiekillsquad.net, and check out forbiddenpanel.com as you are doing so now. Feedback, people. We need some feedback. Emails.
Yeah, definitely.
Posts, anything
come on,
like that.
Post,
we need to know.
Post on the forums. We're getting lonely.
Or at least do us the favor. If you don't want to, if you don't feedback or anything, share the link on Facebook or somewhere else so we can get more fans coming in. We know we have a lot of you guys out there, and we know we are apparently the number one thing to listen to while artists are drawing. So tell us, show us what you're drawing while you're listening to it. That would be awesome.
Yeah, or, you know, tell me how much you hate me, because I hate Blue Water.
Yeah, tell Brian to shut the fuck up about Blue Water, because
yeah,
it's getting old.
Yep. It is. It is getting old. So, yeah, just, you know, give us your feedback. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know what you think of the comics, and, you know, let us know what you think of Forbidden Panel in general.
Because we're lonely, and we need your words.
All right, well, I think we'll go ahead and close out this episode of the Panelcast.
See you guys next week.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.